Reborn Artist. John Lennon's first encounter with Yoko Ono came, fittingly, at an art gallery. One November evening in 1966, he accepted the invitation of John Dunbar, owner of the Indica Gallery in London, to attend the opening of a new exhibit. After the Beatles had stopped touring in August, Lennon, out of fear of being idle, immediately plunged into the filming of How I Won the War. Once that ended and he returned to London, he began to make the rounds of the city's art galleries for the same reason, as well as to acquaint himself with the current trends in art. Now Dunbar had piqued his curiosity with a comment that he was hosting a major new talent from the United States, a female Japanese avant-garde artist, and that there would be a mysterious happening involving climbing into a black bag with someone. Lennon found the prospect titillating because there was an insinuation of removing clothing and having sex. When he arrived, however, Lennon discovered that he had come a day early. The show was still being installed. Touring the premises, he noted a pair of bent nails on a plastic box. Next, he saw a fresh apple placed on a stand labelled simply Apple. The latter work was priced at £200. John Dunbar came along with Yoko Ono in tow to meet the millionaire Beatle, and she handed him a card. On it was a single word, breathe. And I said, "You mean panting?" She says, "That's it, you've got it." And I'm thinking, "I've got it," laughs. "But I'm all geared up to do something. I want to do something." Lennon noticed a ladder whose steps led up to a painting on the ceiling, which was accompanied by a dangling magnifying glass. It's what made me stay. I went up the ladder and I got the spyglass, and there was tiny little writing there. "You're on this ladder. You feel like a fool. You could fall any minute. And you look through and it just says yes." Well, all the so-called avant-garde art at the time and everything that was supposedly interesting was all negative. This smash the piano with a hammer, break the sculpture, boring negative crap. It was all anti-art, anti-establishment. And just that yes made me stay in a gallery full of apples and nails instead of just walking out. Then I went up to this thing that said hammer a nail in. I said, "Can I hammer a nail in?" Ono demurred, wanting to keep the exhibit pristine for the next day's opening. John Dunbar, knowing that it was not wise to refuse a patron so wealthy he could buy the whole show on a whim, began trying to persuade her to allow it. Lennon was amused. So there was this little conference and she finally said, "Okay, you can hammer a nail in for 5 shillings. So smartass here says, "Well, I'll give you an imaginary 5 shillings and hammer an imaginary nail in." And that's when we really met. That's when we locked eyes and she got it and I got it and that was it. The rest, as they say in all the interviews we do, is history. One, Ono kept in contact with Lennon. She had published a book of instructional poems 2 years earlier, titled Grapefruit. She sent him a copy at the Abbey Road studio, where the Beatles recorded their music. When he visited the London headquarters of the Spiritual Regeneration Movement to join and receive his mantra, she also went specifically to meet him again. Fascinated by her, Lennon underwrote her Half a Wind show, which ran from mid-October to mid-November of 1967 in the Listen Gallery. In keeping with the theme, visitors to the gallery were confronted with a variety of items. A bed and pillow, a wash basin, a toothbrush, each cut neatly in half. Lennon appreciated Ono's offbeat sense of humour and thought-provoking art, but he kept his patronage anonymous. The show was credited Yoko plus me. Ono's book of poems stayed by Lennon's bedside in Kenwood, and during the months he was away in India with the Maharishi, she regularly sent him letters and postcards with mystifying poetic messages. "I'm a cloud. Watch for me in the sky." Over time, her eccentric, art-oriented personality aroused in him the spirit that had been nearly asphyxiated under layers of pop music success ever since his days at the Liverpool College of Art. Not since his long conversations with Stu Sutcliffe had he found someone whose ideas on art so stimulated and challenged him. Lennon convinced himself when he departed for India that in the Maharishi's movement, he had at last discovered the direction he was supposed to go. Life in the ashram cleansed his system of drugs and alcohol, filled his lungs with fresh air, restored him physically with wholesome vegetarian meals, and recharged him mentally through hours of daily meditation. But he experienced no brain-altering flash of enlightenment under the bow tree, and as the weeks passed, his mind began to wander. No longer subject to the frantic pace of a beetle, he had time to reflect. What would be his next move?